For what's Universal Time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting new international talks on Syria. The United States says it will use the Friday discussions to pave the way for a future without President Bashar al-Assad. As many as 15 nations will participate in the Vienna talks, including Iran and Russia, President Assad's top two allies, whose military involvement in Syria is aimed at propping up his floundering regime. Secretary of State John Kerry says the talks are the most promising opportunity in years to end the country's bloody conflict and to, in his words, chart a course out of hell. The newly re-elected president of Ivory Coast, Alassane Ouattara, says he will promote national reconciliation and cut poverty in half during his second term. President Ouattara spoke Thursday to VOA in Abidjan, a day after he was declared the winner of the October 25th election with more than 83% of the vote. Mr. Ouattara says he intends to work on healing wounds left over from post-election violence in 2010 that killed 3,000 people.
It shows that reconciliation is making progress, but we have to do more because it's important for the country, for the next generation. And I will continue to do my best to continue to reconcile my compatriots.
President Ouattara says his goal is to reduce poverty by the end of his term in 2020. Tanzania's Electoral Commission says ruling party candidate John Magufuli won the presidential race. The commission says Magufuli of the CCM party defeated main challenger Edward Lowassa of the opposition Chadema party 58-40%. The U.S. and European Union are temporarily lifting some sanctions against Belarus. It comes after it freed the last of its political prisoners in August. This is VOA News. While protests and attacks in Jerusalem have eased, tensions are flaring up in Hebron. A Palestinian man stabbed and wounded an Israeli border guard near a shrine in the city Thursday. The man then tried to stab another security officer before Israeli forces shot and killed the attacker. In a second incident, a Palestinian man allegedly tried to stab an Israeli soldier in Hebron. 11 Israelis and 58 Palestinians have died in more than a month of violence. Israel says most of the Palestinians were killed while attacking or attempting to shoot or stab Israeli civilians, police, or soldiers. The U.S. House of Representatives elected Republican Congressman Paul Ryan as its new speaker Thursday.
When we rush to pass bills that a lot of us don't understand, we are not doing our job. Only a fully functioning House can truly represent the people. And if there were ever a time for us to step up, this would be that time.
Paul Ryan is 45, making him the youngest person to become House Speaker in more than 100 years. He comes from the Midwest state of Wisconsin and served as chairman of the influential Ways and Means Committee. Mr. Ryan replaces outgoing House Speaker John Boehner. 20 UN peacekeepers detained by rebels in South Sudan have been freed, but according to a UN official, 12 contractors with a UN mission in South Sudan are not so lucky. They're still being held. The peacekeepers were detained last Monday while escorting a UN barge carrying fuel down the Nile River. India has made a move to deepen its political and economic partnership with African nations during a summit in New Delhi. Anjana Pasricha has details.
Calling India and Africa two bright spots of hope and opportunity in the global economy, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi wooed African nations on Thursday with the promise of a partnership for prosperity.
Power and irrigation help add value to your resources in Africa and set up industrial and information technology parks.
The third India-Africa summit was India's most ambitious diplomatic outreach to the continent, with representation from virtually all of Africa's 54 countries. Anjana Pasricha, New Delhi.
An international court in The Hague ruled against China and in favor of the Philippines Thursday by agreeing to hear a case brought by the Philippines in a long-standing territorial dispute in the South China Sea. The Permanent Court of Arbitration ruled that the case concerns a disagreement over the interpretation of the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, a question over which the tribunal does have jurisdiction. And the World Health Organization reports the death rate from tuberculosis was cut almost in half compared to what it was in 1990. But the WHO says TB now ranks with HIV/AIDS as a leading worldwide killer. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, October 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Newly re-elected Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara discusses the policies he will follow in his second term.
I hope by the time of my last term in 2020 that Cote d'Ivoire will be seen as a model of democracy and also of the rule of law and, of course, of good economic progress.
Zimbabwe's 91-year-old President Robert Mugabe stumbles again on stage, this time at a summit in India. And Tanzania's ruling party candidate wins Sunday's presidential election, but the opposition is challenging the results.
It is untenable because there is no basis for a recount, and the law provides clearly at what stage you can call for a recount.
Damien Lubuva is chairman of Tanzania's Elections Commission. Malawi's school feeding program is threatened by a food shortage crisis. Uganda calls for continued drug patent exemption for least developed countries. And a new report says environmental degradation is having a negative impact on human health. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Newly re-elected Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara says he will promote national reconciliation and cut poverty in half during his second term. President Ouattara spoke Thursday with VOA's French 2 Africa service in Abidjan a day after he was declared the winner of the October 25th election with more than 83% of the vote. During the past 3 years, Ivory Coast, the world's biggest cocoa producer, has experienced economic growth of 9% per year. Ouattara said he hopes to continue the growth by emphasizing the private sector. The 73-year-old Ouattara said he's a happy man, in part because the election was peaceful and because the results show that the people trust him.
Yes, the election was quite good, transparent, credible, democratic. That was something I wanted us to achieve, because the last election was very bad in terms of the results and the crisis we lived after. Now, for my legacy, I want to give my country a new constitution, which will be more modern, more coherent, which will insist on the equality of people, of the chances of people, of the gender, and also give more prospect to the youth. This is very important. In short, I want the country to be more democratic. I hope by the time of my last term in 2020 that Cote d'Ivoire will be seen as a model of democracy and also of the rule of law and, of course, of good economic progress. And my economic policy and my objective is to reduce poverty, because the poverty level was very high. I think we will make it.
This is my next question, Mr. President. Which steps are you taking to transform a miracle double-digit growth into a sustainable growth in Cote d'Ivoire, which is like in one of the poorest region of the world?
Yes. Well, of the world, but not of Africa. Cote d'Ivoire clearly spent 10 years of crisis. This had a negative impact on the country. But for the past 4 years, we've had a growth rate, an average annual growth rate of 9%. And this will continue. We will continue to give emphasis on the private sector because I am a liberal. I believe in liberal policies. We have taken some important measures, some reforms, which everyone thought was not possible. Secondly, we want to get more efficiency in the public sector and public investment. Doing all that will get a very high rate of growth to reduce the level of poverty. Now we were above 50%. We've reduced it by 10% in 4 years. My objective is to reduce it by half for my next term by 2020. And I think it's possible because the people of Cote d'Ivoire, the mentality has changed. I want a new Ivorian who will think that working hard, being disciplined, being together, and be open to others, those are the main ingredients of success of a country like the United States, where I studied, and where I lived for a long time. So I want Cote d'Ivoire to be a small America.
Mr. President, the reconciliation is really important. Do you think that the economy, the good health of the economy could help?
Yes, exactly. In fact, good economic policies and a good economic situation help reconciliation. And that has been the case. You see, after what we experienced, to have this election, which was very peaceful, with a very high turnout, more than 50%, having the president elected at 84% majority. This shows that reconciliation is making progress. But we have to do more because it's important for the country, for the next generation. And I will continue to do my best to continue to reconcile my compatriots.
That was newly re-elected Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara. He was speaking with VOA's French to Africa service reporter Tatiana Mossat in Abidjan. Tanzania's National Electoral Commission chairman says candidate John Magufuli of the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi party has won the October 25th presidential election and will officially be presented with a victory certificate today, Friday. Magufuli garnered almost 59% of the total vote cast, while his main challenger, Edward Lowassa of the opposition coalition UNKAWA, came in second with 39%. Mr. Lowassa has rejected the results, citing alleged fraud. Electoral Commission Chairman Damien Lubuva tells reporter Peter Clotty that this year's vote was competitive but peaceful and transparent.
Generally, the election was highly contested, it was highly competitive, but nevertheless, at the end of it all, it was generally conducted peacefully until today when we announced the winner. That, I think, I'm proud of that.
Honorable Lubuva, would you say the election met international standard in transparency, credibility, and satisfaction of the majority of Tanzanians who voted for the winner or for the participant in this election?
Well, there, as always, you can never have achieved 100% success. But all said and done, I think we tried our best, and it ended up what I might describe in a peaceful manner, but transparency and, you know, free and fair, despite the fact that you may have, in certain quarters, some may be complaining of this and that, but I, for one, together with my colleagues in the Electoral Commission, we are satisfied that we did all we could. And as the international observers, many of them who have availed to us the interim reports, I think their finding was that it was fair and free and fair and transparent.
You've heard some of the complaints from the losers, specifically in the presidential candidate, Edward Lowassa, who says the election should be scrapped and a recounting should be done. What is your take to such calls?
Well, that we heard, but is untenable because there is no basis for a recount, and the law provides clearly at what stage you can call for a recount. In the various polling stations, the agents can indicate their dissatisfaction and call for a recount. But beyond that, a recount is not really called for.
What is next in the process, in the electoral process? What is next?
Well, as far as we are concerned in the Electoral Commission, what follows is tomorrow. Tomorrow is when there is the formal sort of handing over certificate to the one who has been declared the winner.
Damien Lubuva is the chairman of Tanzania's National Elections Commission. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 30th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 and a half minutes past the hour. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has congratulated the people, government, and political parties of Tanzania for what he calls the peaceful and orderly manner in which the country held the October 25th elections. But in a statement, the Secretary General says he remains concerned about the situation in Zanzibar and underscores that any disputes related to the electoral process should be addressed through existing legal framework in a peaceful and transparent manner. For analysis of the Tanzania presidential election results, we go to VOA's Jill Craig in Dar es Salaam.
Tanzania will soon have a new president in office after the Electoral Commission finalized its tabulations and announced that John Magufuli was elected with more than 58% of the vote. The election season has been a highly contested one after opposition candidate Edward Lowassa defected from ruling party CCM over the summer and launched a competitive opposition coalition. Lowassa has rejected the official results that gave him about 40% of the vote. Dar es Salaam businessman Fabian Kasonia, who describes himself as politically neutral, says Tanzanians will find Magufuli to be a good president. Magufuli has been serving as Tanzania's Minister of Works.
They know his capacity of doing work. Because when he was a minister of the previous minister there, he did well. So we expect that even in time to come, he will do well.
And university student Danford Hamisi believes that people's political differences won't matter once the newly elected president is sworn in.
So he's going to be the president for all Tanzanians, regardless of their parties or their political beliefs.
But some are not so pleased with the election's outcome. The lead opposition candidate, Edward Lowassa, called for a nationwide recount Wednesday, alleging irregularities. Meanwhile, the chairman of the Electoral Commission in semi-autonomous Zanzibar, Jaka Salim Jaka, annulled that region's results Wednesday for what he called shortfalls in polling. He announced fresh elections would be held. Legal expert Charles Rachungura says the annulment of Zanzibar's vote could create problems for Magufuli.
There are going to be constitutional problems around that because the president has to appoint a cabinet within a given time. And the cabinet members are drawn from both sides of the union. Now, what is going to happen if elections don't take place soon enough in Zanzibar? That means he will find himself in a dilemma. He cannot appoint his cabinet as the constitution requires.
So the election drama of the past week appears set to continue. But the streets of Dar es Salaam remained peaceful Thursday as people absorbed the election results. Jill Craig, VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe suffered yet another embarrassing moment yesterday when he stumbled and nearly toppled backwards at a summit currently underway in India. Looking tired and weak, Mr. Mugabe lost his balance and staggered as he tried to climb a tiny stage to greet the Indian Prime Minister. The 91-year-old president grabbed international headlines in February after tumbling headlong at the Harare International Airport. Political analyst Nkululeko Sibana, who says these are clear signs that old age has caught up with Mr. Mugabe and that he should therefore consider stepping down.
I think it is a huge embarrassment both to the president himself, to the nation, and to every Zimbabwean in this world who has been subjected today by images coming out of India showing the president failing to step on a no more than 5-inch step and attempting more than once to do so, but completely failing until he gets some help. It's also worrying that the people that the president relies upon, his medical people, his guards, his planners, were unable to foresee or to foretell that the president will be unable to ascend on that single step. It's a single step, and we must underline that. And that, in effect, these people could have got that step completely removed, completely smoothened out, as you would do when there is a disabled person who needs to get onto the podium. Now, we have come to a position where the president has completely brought the country into disrepute, completely showed the rest of the world that his age is limiting him in terms of his work and in terms of his ability.
Political analyst Nkululeko Sibana was speaking from England with reporter Untungamile Nkomo of US Zimbabwe Service. Malawi is facing its worst food shortages in years after flooding and drought during the past growing season. The UN World Food Programme is planning emergency food aid, but the crisis affecting nearly all of Malawi is straining resources and could threaten the school feeding program. Lamek Mansina reports for VOA from Chiruzula in southern Malawi.
Sungane Rollins goes to school on an empty stomach. His family's maize harvest was poor this year. His grandmother, Alina Paulo, searches her field for any remaining salvageable crops.
Here she says we do not have enough to eat and children go to school with no breakfast. There were floods followed by a dry spell and that affected the crops. The UN World Food Programme introduced school feeding in Malawi 15 years ago. Nearly a million primary school students currently benefit. At Tsunganis School, women prepare food for the students, including morning porridge. Eating with his friends, Tsungane says, once I take porridge here, I regain strength and I am able to concentrate on what the teacher is teaching us in class. Even in good years, the WFP says the school feeding is a safety net for families during the lean season. Now, with this crisis, it is essential, says Koko Ushiyama, the WFP country representative for Malawi.
We should be scaling up school feeding at this time. Unfortunately, the funding on that part is also quite constrained. So we have a very difficult situation.
Ushiyama says school feeding keeps parents from pulling kids out of school when the food and money are tight. For now, Tsungane and his seven cousins stay in school while his grandmother tries to make ends meet at home. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Chiradzulu, Malawi.
Talks resumed this week at the World Trade Organization in Geneva on the question of renewing the pharmaceutical patent trade exemption for the world's least developed countries. Representing those countries at the talks is Uganda alongside Nepal and Bangladesh. At issue is a U.S. government proposal to impose a 10-year limit on the exemption. Ugandan officials say that change could cost lives in the countries that need access to new low-cost generic drugs the most. Lisbeth Pollard reports from Kampala.
Under current World Trade Organization guidelines, 34 of the world's least developed countries, classified as LDCs, are exempt from pharmaceutical trade patents. Most of these countries are in Africa. The exemption means LDCs like Uganda can import or manufacture low-cost generic versions of name-brand drugs, whereas countries considered to be more developed, like for example France or Kenya, cannot. In real terms, that means an LDC like Bangladesh has the right to make or import, either for use or for sale to another LDC, a low-cost generic version of a new medicine that could cost hundreds of dollars a pill in the United States. However, this exemption is set to expire at the end of the year. Uganda is pushing for an indefinite renewal for countries in the LDC bracket. UNAIDS, the World Health Organization, the European Union, and Doctors Without Borders all back this proposal. But the United States wants to restrict the renewal to 10 years. Ugandan health officials say a decade is not enough for Uganda to develop research labs and independent manufacturing. Moses Malumba is the executive director for the Center of Health, Human Rights, and Development in Kampala.
In the era of diseases like HIV/AIDS or tuberculosis and malaria, we really need to access the medicines. Unfortunately, the current discussion seems to be focused on more of rewarding the inventors. And for partners like United States, it becomes even more sickening if they speak on one hand to provide help and then on the other hand to adopt policies and laws that will be taking away the medicines.
If the exemption is not renewed this year, that would mean that as of January 1st, LDCs could not manufacture low-cost generics of off-patent drugs, which are typically more than 20 years old. The U.S. Embassy in Kampala says while the United States recognizes the gravity of the situation, intellectual property protections for pharmaceuticals create incentives for investment in research and development of new treatments. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala.
A planetary health report released today, Friday, by the Rockefeller Foundation highlights how environmental degradation is having a negative impact on human health across the globe, including in Africa. Alex Izer, executive director of the African Population and Health Research Center, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the report.
We know that global warming and rising in temperature, it does affect food production in many different ways. It does affect the opportunity for disease, emergence of diseases, and they are like malaria, for instance.
Can you think of specific examples in sub-Saharan Africa where encroachment of human habitat and animal habitat has led to an increase in certain diseases?
You can look at the Ebola epidemic in West Africa that happened, which was something that definitely in some ways had its origin with parts. But more importantly, I think if we think about drought, that is a major challenge in, I think, over the last 30 years, these are all related.
You mentioned a certain chemical that is found in higher concentrations in grains in sub-Saharan Africa and how it affects the health of children. What chemical is that, and where are we seeing it, and how does it affect children's health?
I was talking of aflatoxin. That is related to liver cancer, and it is found in different grains, in maize, in groundnut, and in different types of grains. And it has huge implications, and it relates to almost a 30% or so increase in stunting in sub-Saharan Africa between 1990 and 2012.
That was Alex Izek, Executive Director of the African Population and Health Research Center. He was speaking with Ricky Shryak from Nairobi, Kenya. Time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with football. A brace scored by Sidiki Maiga and a goal by Mohamed Haidara propelled Mali to a 3-0 triumph over North Korea at the FIFA Under-17 World Cup in Talca, Chile on Thursday. On Sunday, defending champions Nigeria tackled Brazil, while Mali engaged Croatia in the quarterfinals. Meanwhile, Algeria's USM Algiers host the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe in the opening leg of the Orange Africa Champions League final in Algiers tomorrow Saturday. Elsewhere, Ivory Coast host Ghana in the return leg of the African Nations Championship qualifying in Abidjan today, Friday. The match was put back by a week because of the general elections in Ivory Coast. Ghana won the first leg 2-1. Turning to hockey, Ghana beat Zimbabwe 4-2, Nigeria overpowered Tanzania 10-0, as South Africa overwhelmed Namibia 16-0 in the men's contest at the Africa 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympic hockey qualifiers in Randburg, South Africa on Thursday. In the women's contest, Namibia pipped Zimbabwe 2-1 as South Africa overwhelmed Kenya 12-0. Today, Friday, in the women's contest, Zimbabwe play Nigeria, Ghana face Kenya as South Africa tackle Tanzania. Tomorrow, Saturday, in the men's semifinals, Egypt play Ghana as Kenya engage South Africa. On Sunday, Tanzania challenge Namibia, South Africa play Ghana, and Kenya plays Nigeria in the women's contest, while Botswana and Tanzania clash in a men's fixture. Moving on to handball, Tunisian defending champions Club Africains play Egypt's Zamalek in the men's final at the Africa Handball Club Championships in Nador, Morocco tomorrow Saturday. Prior to the final, Tunisia's Esperance face Egypt's Sporting Alexandria in the bronze medal playoff. In the women's contest, Angolan sides defending champions Primero de Agosto and Petro Atletico clash in a repeat of last year's final. The match will be preceded by the bronze medal playoff between Ivory Coast's Africa Sports and Cameroon's FAP. Finally, South Africa play Argentina in the bronze medal playoff at the Rugby World Cup in London, England today, Friday, while defending champions New Zealand and Australia clash in Saturday's final. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The newly re-elected president of Ivory Coast, Alassane Ouattara, says he aims to promote national reconciliation and cut poverty in half during his second term. That is it for this Friday, October 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Strydock, as well as post editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good weekend.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.